This program. Application deadline is March of 2019. Visit gtc.edu/promise for more information.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Linda Fleshinsky, a mother, grandmother, freelance writer, and former Racine School Board president. And now, here's today's host.
Welcome to Community Matters. Today we're going to replay the candidates forum in the 62nd Wisconsin Assembly District between Democrat John Lehman and Republican Bob Wittke that aired on October 9th on The Morning Show.
And we welcome you to the Tuesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I am pleased to welcome you to a candidates forum for today's morning show. It is for the two candidates vying for the 62nd congressional seat, assembly seat in Caledonia. And we have with us in our studios this morning Republican Bob Wittke and Democrat John Lehman. And WGTD News Director Dave McGrath will be assisting me in the hosting of this candidates forum today. And in collaboration with WGTD General Manager David Cole, we have crafted a series of questions, most of them very directly related to matters of local and statewide interest, and we will be hearing from each candidate on each of those questions. And we look forward to a lively and thorough and civil conversation about some really important issues. So, Bob Wittke, John Lehman, we welcome both of you to the morning show. Good to have you here. And we would like to hear from each of you first in an opening statement in which you tell us something about who you are, what has brought you to this point in your life professionally and personally, and a little bit about why you want to serve the citizens of the 62nd Congressional District in this way. Let's begin with Bob Wittke, please.
Okay, well, I'm a father of four. I'm a Wind Point resident. I grew up in my main ties are the Village of Caledonia, where I grew up. My dad was the Highway Department superintendent there for over 40 years. I've got four children. All four of them will graduate from Case High School in Racine. I currently have a junior there, so I have one left. Beyond that, I've got 30 years in. My background is in finance and accounting. I've got 30 years in as a tax professional. I started with companies here in this area like Modine Manufacturing, Snap-on Tools in the manufacturing environment. Spent some time with Deloitte & Touche in their tax technology group. And I currently work for a company that produces tax software for Fortune 1000 companies. So I do customer service. I work with our development group on certain aspects of income tax, sales tax, property tax, software that that we provide to that, as well as customer service. I hold elected office now. I've been I'm in my first term as the on the Board of Education for the Racine Unified School District. Currently, I'm in my second year serving as its president, and I'm running for this office because I want to see us to continue to move the state forward so that my children and others in the district continue to have the quality of life that they tell me they desire as I move around the district. I believe I've got experience that will be an asset moving on to Madison in the educational area as well as with my tax and finance and accounting background. And so I look to serve the people in the district in that manner.
That's Bob Wittke, the Republican candidate for the 62nd Congressional District for Caledonia. Now we'll hear from the Democratic candidate, John Lehman.
Thanks, Greg. Your listeners, I think, probably are familiar with much of my career. I started out on the city council for a decade, was in the state assembly for 10 years, served in the state senate on two different occasions, for a total of about 7 years. So I've a lot of experience both at the local level of government and in Madison. Professionally, I've been a school teacher, mainly high school economics and world history, but before I was in the legislature. So I take that kind of perspective in. I'm happily retired. I'm 73 years old. When I lost the election in 2010, I thought, oh, this is okay. I'm 65 years old. That's the age my grandfather was when he retired, or both of my grandfathers. And so I thought, well, this is kind of a natural. It's unfortunate I lost the election, but I'm done. Well, then folks asked me to run in a recall, which I did, and came back into the legislature for another 2.5 years, and then ran for lieutenant governor with Mary Burke and 4 years ago. And at that time, I was thinking, well, you're getting a little old for this, but you got a lot to offer yet. Unfortunately, we were unable to prevail in that election 4 years ago, and then I thought, well, I'm really retired. But recently, I've had some experiences, especially in 2017. One of my pastimes is working with the Racine Interfaith Coalition and working at the Holy Communion Lutheran Church food pantry. And as part of that, I joined a lobby day, you know, just as a regular citizen to go to Madison. And quite frankly, I was assigned to, with a group of mainly elderly folks, to go visit Tom Weatherstone. Well, number one, he had supposedly said he was going to be there. He wasn't there. Almost all the other legislators were there. And we ran into a buzzsaw in his office. And I realized, most people probably wouldn't have seen what's going on, but with the hiring of Keith Best in his office, who you may have seen in the newspapers recently as sending out a racist Twitter in July, Weatherstone fell victim to what some legislators do, and that is they hire a political operation in their legislative office. They don't concentrate on serving constituents, but they have political folks. John Lieber, who lost the primary to Bob, was, I would put in that category as well. Ambitious Republican operatives who are put on the salary of the state basically as a holding pattern to get involved in politics later. And I'm just afraid that if we elect another Republican, we're going to see the same thing. Weatherstone has endorsed my opponent. I don't want to see that happen. It's a very difficult district for a Democrat to run in. It's been gerrymandered. But I thought, well, I'm going to step up and try to offer decent representation, not coming out of that strong corporate background of Modine like Weatherstone did or that Bob did, but coming out with a people's perspective. So I've joined the race, even though the odds are difficult from the Democrat side, just to try to get the voice of regular people out there.
John Lehman, the Democratic candidate for the 62nd Congressional District. I hope by the end of this forum I'll be saying 62nd a little more fluidly than I am at the moment. We're, again, grateful to have both of you here and look forward to this conversation. Dave McGrath, let's have you pose the first question.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Bob and John. The elephant in the room in this part of the state, of course, is Foxconn. Mm-hmm. Especially the incentive package.
Just a minute, the elephant, that's the Republicans.
Sorry about that, John. The incentive package that the governor and the GOP-controlled state legislature offered them to set up shop in Mount Pleasant. As we all know, all the Democrats in this part of the state voted for it and sort of split the party, and it cost Peter Barca his minority leadership job. So just for grins this morning to start out, had you been in the legislature, John, when this came up, would you have supported the Foxconn incentive package? Why or why not? And then we'll come to Bob.
It's interesting that you ask, because on the day of the vote in Madison, a former staff member called me, and I hadn't talked to her for a long time, but John, how would you vote on this? You know, well, you know, you don't follow it as well when you're back in Racine, and you're not, you don't have all the position papers and all the details and whatever. But from what I knew at the time, And I knew how my Democratic colleagues were voting. I had said, no, I wouldn't have voted for it. It's just one of the things I think that is not appreciated so much is how much rah-rah there is at the beginning of all these projects and how the multipliers about the economic effect are so artificially constructed. And what the size of commitment is compared to anything else that's been done in the United States or anything else that's been done in Wisconsin. And you got to step back a little bit and look at all that stuff and not, you know, fall victim to the steamroller that's progressing. I was quite fascinated that Scott Walker could get especially upstate Republicans who are supposed to be watching the tax dollars to plunk out $4 billion, you know. The other thing that I think you don't appreciate until you see it up close in the legislature, and that is if you commit $4 billion in one direction and you're facing the opposition of Republicans who say they never want to raise taxes on anything in the other direction, you do nothing but create a big hole. You create a difficulty for any other program that exists in the state budget. And the current estimates are the least that we're putting out per job is $200,000 or something like that. Couple hundred million a year, $400 or $500 million a biennium, we're committing to that. That leaves a roadblock to other well-meaning programs. The estimates from the Fiscal Bureau is that we'll be $1 billion, we'll be paying more than $1 billion in taxes than we recoup in 15 years. So that $1 billion has a lot of good purposes. And if you live under the presumption that you never raise taxes ever, like you often hear from my Republican colleagues who have signed pledges that way, you're leaving tremendous difficulties in the state budget with a deal like Foxconn.
And we're going to build on Foxconn as we go along, but I'm going to give Bob the same opportunity. Had you been in the state legislature when the governor came up with this economic development, how would you have gone and why?
I would have supported for a couple of simple reasons. The opportunity it brings in this part of the state. I think we all know the struggles that we've had in our communities, the high unemployment rates, the opportunity to bring good-paying jobs to this part of the state, an investment of $10 billion. And I think one of the things that's always forgotten is that there's this perception that there's a truckload of money that's being set out there to hand to them. The incentives that are in the package are all done based on performance. Right now, if you go out to the site, there are over 100 pieces of construction equipment that are out there, destined to be 120 close to time. The building is going up as promised. And talk to people that had not been employed now, that are now being employed as equipment operators, and with an anticipation that they will have jobs for at least the foreseeable future, at least the next 4 years. Those are real jobs in the construction industry that our people locally are getting. The investment is spreading to other parts of the state. Foxconn has made investments now in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, Green Bay, Wisconsin. We look to see that $1 invested in this would bring back $18 into the economy here. And let's not lose sight of the supplemental jobs with suppliers or others locally as more people come into the community or other suppliers come into the community to service the campus that they will put there. And so with that type of opportunity, with the safeguards in the incentives that allow for performance-based tax credits, yes, I would have supported and voted for it.
And by the way, during the course of the morning, anytime you want to jump in and discuss a point that your opponent made, feel free to do that. And John, so this is what intrigues me. You said you would vote against it. So, and I know you're a Bill Proxmire type of Democrat. You were a door knocker. You go out and you talk to the voters. What if your constituents, who you represent, said, this is going to give me a job. It's going to give my son a job. It's going to give my uncle a job. How do you resolve that?
Yeah, I have done a lot of door knocking, and I've talked to a lot of people, and some of them feel that way. You know, the Foxconn is contentious in our area. If you look at the polling that's been done about Foxconn, the citizens slightly disfavor it and somewhat favor it, depending on who you talk to. It's not exactly 50-50, but it's in that range. So I'm not surprised that people have bought this and are hopeful. And I don't want any of my comments to be interpreted that I don't want to see a new high-tech manufacturing facility located in Racine County or Kenosha County or wherever around us where people can go to job. I just don't think, from a public policy viewpoint, that it's a good buy, that we're ever going to get our money back, and that it is, regardless of how big it gets or how it develops or whatever, it's not the best use of those public dollars. I have been in the legislature long enough to see all kinds of promises made and see WEDEC do all kinds of things with economic development loans and grants that don't get paid back and people walk away from them. We've already seen where Foxconn has said, well, we're going to make these giant displays, and they backed off on that, you know. We've already seen where people in Illinois are complaining about the environmental ease with which Foxconn is being treated. But to take a company and say, you can go to court in a different fashion than everybody else can. You can have a different environmental. You can have different utility rates. You know, that kind of favoritism is choosing winners and losers. If you want to take $3, $4 billion, spread it around to existing Wisconsin companies and help them develop and grow, or take on some smaller projects where they're truly all around the state. You know, people are, you know, talking about, well, you see they're developing in Eau Claire and Milwaukee and whatever. If they're buying a building in Racine. If I gave you $4 billion, you could pay a couple hundred, you could pay a couple million dollars to buy a building in Racine or put up an office in Milwaukee or whatever. It just doesn't make sense from the taxpayer's point of view. And I always get a kick out of it. You know, the Republican side is supposed to be watching the dollar, and they just go gaga when corporate America came to them with this thing, or corporate Taiwan came to them with this thing and said, give us the handout, give us the free rules, let us do what we want to do here. And quite frankly, it makes big politics. The president comes to town, the governor says, look what I'm bringing to Wisconsin. But I don't think when the citizens sit back and look at it, and when the analysis is done 15 years down the road, that it's going to look so rosy. We're talking about an industry that is rapidly changing. You can build a factory today that's out of date tomorrow. And I think there's a lot of concerns about Foxconn. I wish them well. I just am not happy that it's my dollars that are going in there, my dollars that I'll never get back. The payback date is something like 2045. I'll be 100 years old if I make it that long by the payback date. You know, this is a long-term major commitment that's going to negatively affect state budgets for my lifetime and for the lifetime of my children and grandchildren.
And I want to piggyback on the point you made where Foxconn has changed their plans a little bit already, but I want to give Bob Witke a chance to respond. I think what John is saying, and this is a textbook example of, do the ends justify the means? And he is saying that it seems like Foxconn's getting a pass on a lot of things. How do you take that? What's your position on that?
Okay, from my perspective, some of the talking points we hear all the time, they're giving a pass environmentally. That's not true. They still have to comply with all of the federal, state, local environmental rules. Some of the processing may have been streamlined to move the project along. We hear now that Illinois is complaining about their environmental problems. The city of Chicago takes in 2 billion gallons of water a day, returns nothing. Foxconn will take in over close to, let's say, 4 or 5 to 6 million. They will recycle and send back at least 70% of that. If you went to the groundbreaking and saw some of the things that they do to make their plants more efficient, to cut their electrical use. They have a high degree of reliance on electrical power for some of the manufacturing processes and so on. They do, to every extent that they can cut and become more green in their use of electricity, looking how they set up their information technology centers, how they look to recycle their water, how they look to use solar and other pieces to cut their electrical uses. I think some of the conversation gets to what I would say are points that are driving at things that need to be looked at factually in their process. We look at up to anywhere up to 13,000 jobs at $54,000 apiece. Just here in this part, they've already made close to a $200 million investment in the University of Wisconsin. They are investing in our state. The contracts that were let out cover 90% are companies that are within the state here. I want to say close to almost all of our counties are going to have some interest in this as we move forward. And so the other part that I look at is I keep hearing that, well, we're giving them $4 billion, okay? But they have to perform in order to get that. There are also clawback provisions within that incentive package where there are repayments if performance isn't met. Take a look at the sales tax exemption as a good example. Sales tax exemption for construction materials and so on. The only way you're going to get the exemption is if you spend the money to construct. No construction, no expense. So you are going to get something injected into the economy. As the spend goes on, they're given an incentive to make that spend in this area. And so I think the taxpayer needs to understand that it's not as though we're pulling $4 billion out of current budget and handing it to them. They do have to make the investment in our state. And I think that's one of the things that that I always try to emphasize on is are those investments. They do have to perform. They do have to provide jobs in this area. And so that's why I'm a supporter of seeing our economy grow. The better our economy grows, the better the state, the better budget environment the state will have moving forward.
Foxconn could dominate this whole conversation. I want to talk to John real quickly because you did mention that they have, Foxconn has changed their plans now. They're going to build smaller screens, they tell us. So let's say John Lehman prevails in the election and he's now in the state legislature. What would you like to see in that incentive package tweaked on the taxpayer's behalf?
Well, you know, we bought the pig in the poke and the deal is signed. And in terms of a legislator or legislators going in there now and saying we're going to switch the deal, you know, that you're under a contract there. But I do think that it's the close monitoring of what's going on and make sure that we're not paying incentives that are not due them. Looking at the environmental impact, being sensitive to folks who have, like myself, who have worked on the Great Lakes Compact. And I really believe that watching the environmental portions of what goes on is important. I think it's very important when you talk about Foxconn to realize that Foxconn is not paying for those incentives. The taxpayers are. The Fiscal Bureau has estimated that $2.85 billion will come from existing taxes, not new taxes, not taxes on spinoffs or anything, but that the taxpayers are paying those incentives directly. And that's the concern that I have. What's coming out of my pocketbook? Besides the concern of, I mean, Bob, you can listen to him. He's got a balance sheet mentality. These are the various items that they're putting up, and this is what they're paying for, and this is what they're doing. But I don't think the Republicans, and I don't think Mr. Witke is concerned enough about the externalities, the environment, what happens to school district, what happens to traffic, what happens to our local community in terms of the way things change. And that is all, you know, unknown. It's we're in a very large gamble. All I'm saying is Scott Walker made a bad gamble. He went to Vegas with too big of a pot of money, and he put too much money down, and we still don't know if the jackpots are going to be there or not.
Do you want to respond to that, Bob, and then we'll move on?
Yeah, I find it quite interesting all the time that it seems like this has been a common theme as I've started out into this office, that my background in finance and accounting somehow is a detriment. So if you take a look at, we're talking billions. I believe that with that mentality, the ability to understand how these incentives are interrelated to the taxes that generate them, to the numbers that are there, I think could be more of an asset than a detriment as well. Do I not consider all of the other ramifications? I was there at one of the status meetings when they were talking about the some of the environmental pieces that are being put together for runoff, where they will have one of the largest retention ponds around that will offer a 100-year, could handle a 100-year flood, and we're looking at other things, other attributes about that. So to just kind of categorize and say that I don't consider any of the other opportunities, that's not correct.
Very good. This is the WGTD Morning Show. I'm Dave McGrath, and situated correctly to my right is Bob Wittke, the Republican candidate for the 62nd Assembly District. To my left is John Lehman, the Democratic candidate. Greg Berg, you wanted to jump in?
Let's move on to the state budget and a couple of very basic questions. This will go to Mr. Wittke first. First of all, your general thoughts about what the budget looks like going into 2019 and any concerns that you might have, and maybe more specifically and somewhat related to the conversation we've just finished up, what portion of tax dollars, what portion of that budget should be devoted on dollars to try to incentivize companies to move here? I mean, what is the proper proportion of that being in the state budget?
Okay, so I believe that going into the next biennium, our fiscal health is strong. I believe that budgeting is one of the most important tasks that the legislature takes on in any biennium. Our last budget surplus was close to $579 million. This budget, the one that we're currently in, looks like it's going to project close to $385 million, somewhere in that range. We have record high rainy day funds, so we've got a good solid base to work with. So once again, going in, I look to work to be that good steward of taxpayer dollars. One of the top priorities that we have, the largest funded portion of the budget, is K through 12 education, and that needs to continue to be a top priority. We've got right now one of the best economies ever in Wisconsin. We've got low unemployment, continued manufacturing job growth, and if I was going to look at priorities in the budget for the next period, it has to be continuing to invest in K-12 education. That will lead to building the workforce in the future, and that's something that I've dealt with in my as I've worked through with the Board of Education. I'm on the steering committee for the Academies of Racine. I see directly the opportunities that we have for the next generation, and I think that's what is really important. Now is the time that if we don't perform in our education system to prepare them for the jobs that are going to be coming, we're going to miss an opportunity to turn things around in these areas. Also, medical care for the poor to make sure that we are investing in programs that provide for health care for them. The university system we have to continue to work through, and I think worker training. You asked about incentives. Okay, I've sat on both sides of the fence for incentives. Our state does provide a good environment for manufacturing and other things. We have manufacturing credits that are applied on a tax basis across all of our manufacturers in the state, along their electricity use and so on. We have agricultural credits that try to help develop our farming industries as well. Incentives like you see for Foxconn, and I'm sure you're going to talk about some that may be offered to Kimberly-Clark as well, in that those should be used sparingly and on a case-by-case basis. There shouldn't be just a broad brush to say, let's just give out incentives just to draw more employers here. Investing in longtime manufacturers or bringing in substantial investments to their state, I think should be evaluated on a case-by-case basis and then move on from there.
John Lehman.
In the last budget, as you followed it, the biggest problem was the transportation budget, and the Republican side can't decide what it wants to do. You know, you got a real challenge here. You got roads and bridges that need to be fixed, and then you got on the Republican side folks who don't want to raise taxes under any circumstances. So they're fighting with themselves in this last budget, and I think transportation, a real source of transportation funding, needs to be looked at. My opponent has said more borrowing is appropriate on that. I disagree with that. In terms of school funding, my opponent has talked on July 11th on Wisconsin I about we don't need more strong school funding. He has single-handedly stopped Racine Unified from having a referendum recently. I think there's good talk, but when the rubber hits the road, you've got to stand up and you got to say we really need specific dollars. You know, a lot of people are pleased that Scott Walker, right before his election now, has come by with a stronger school funding budget than he had for most of the 8 years he's been in service. The question is, should you continue that? We still are funding special education down at the, I think, 26% range. We still have tremendous challenges in our schools. I know that if we had Tony Evers as governor, we'd have stronger school funding than we would under Scott Walker. The rubber hits the road with Kimberly-Clark. You know, the next up, and it may be before the next budget, but are we going to keep doing what we did with Foxconn? Are we going to offer these incentive packages, and have we set a precedent? No. So that every company that comes in that needs help is going to get these same kind of big incentive packages, and then there's no money left for anything else, or it really puts the screws to the rest of the budget. In terms of university funding, we've had a very, in my opinion, gimmicky tax freeze from the governor. If you're going to do what the governor did and what the Republicans did in terms of a tax freeze on the university budget, you need to backfill. Otherwise, you're just tearing down that university. And if you're strongly in favor of the University of Wisconsin system and public education in that way, then you've got to step up to the plate and you've got to have some funding. Tuition freezes for kids are fine, but put money into accessibility where kids can get their loans and their loans refinanced. Put money into the GPR for the university budget. But don't just play politics with the university. Don't just play politics with the public schools. Don't just play politics with transportation.
If we could, for a moment, let's bring the discussion now into the 62nd district.
Just respond to a couple of things? Because I just want to respond when
sure
things
enough.
are totally incorrect. Okay? So I would like to go back to, first of all, on the transportation side, which I thought would be a separate topic, but that's fine. If you take a look at the interview I did, you will find that I said we can either tax the current taxpayer out of our needs right now, and we cannot borrow our way out. I'm not a supporter of continuing to up the borrowing. Bonding is at a low level right now, but I would not advocate borrowing extensively anymore to solve our needs. We can't borrow our way out of it. Secondly, a thought that I single-handedly stopped something from happening in the school district to me is just inaccurate. There isn't anything I can single-handedly do outside of policy that is written in the school district to do anything. A decision was made. If you go back through everything that was done, a vote was taken, a decision was made not to ask the taxpayers for $400 million over a course of time without a better plan that better identified the needs of the district. There was not support in the community for something that was not planned properly. I cannot single-handedly stop anything, and this is a common thing that I keep hearing from some people on the left side that want to believe that I would do something for political purposes, which is truly incorrect. As far as school funding goes, I always advocate with anything that we do in the state that we take a look at how something is being spent to make sure that we get that we're getting the results that are being advocated.
Very good. Let's quickly, John.
Can I just respond on transportation spending? I would encourage people to go to Wisconsin Eye and watch Bob's interview and look at how weakly he stands up for school spending and how weakly he stands up for a specific source of transportation funding. Dancing around, what are you going to really support when the rubber hits the road if you get to Madison? And I appreciate his comments about not single-handedly stopping the referendum with Racine Unified, but I think it is important to note that as the president, he's got the first shot at what's on the agenda and how things move through the school district's voting process.
Let's move on to the important topic of prisons. There are some reports that our state prisons right now are at 140% capacity, and it's a really thorny issue, and the solutions are never really black and white. So is the answer to build more prisons? Do we need more or different alternative prisons for some crimes? Do we need to be changing our sentencing objectives? Are we incarcerating too many people? In your opinion, what are the essential issues that most urgently need to address be addressed? Let's start with you, John Layman.
Thank you. The Wisconsin prison system, as you know, is approximately twice as big as the state of Minnesota, which has a comparable population. We've got, last numbers I saw from 2016, 22,000 people in our state prison system locked up and 10,000 in Minnesota. Minnesota does have something that we don't have, and that is a larger probation and parole system. So what they have decided to do is go with a less expensive alternative, and that is get more people out under probation and parole. And there's been a little change from that because they're coming by some truth in sentencing. When I first went in the legislature, the big rage was truth in sentencing. Bonnie Ladwig and others were trying to get the laws where you lock everybody up. Recently, Tommy Thompson, who was the governor at the time, has come out and said, you know, that was one of the big mistakes I made when I was governor, is building too many prisons. And currently, we have a governor who prides himself at never having visited a Wisconsin prison during his term of office. There's no interest, it seems, in really looking at that overcrowding and really looking at solutions. I've long been active with the Racine Interfaith Coalition in treatment and diversion and trying to find ways to not lock so many people up. The ultimate solution is to go at the drug addiction and the illiteracy and the mental illness problems that are getting so many people locked up. And is to the extent that we can divert people from that system and take especially nonviolent offenders and get them under probation and parole. And not, there's been a lot of criticism of our system of revocation without really any kind of violation. The parole agent or the person in charge gets mad and they send them back and they lock them up. Long sentences, easy revocation rather than some alternatives. Not having treatment and diversion, all those are problems that Wisconsin needs to really seriously look at. It takes a governor who's really willing to look at our prison system.
Bob Whitke.
Okay, so my focus is the constituents across all of the 62nd District. What's the impact on them? They want to come home. They want to feel safe in their communities. They want to be protected from criminals. So in my perspective, we need to make sure that we are incarcerating those that are violent criminals, habitual criminals. I believe that we need to increase our investments, as has been talked about, in our treatment and diversion programs. There was an additional investment made in what's called the TAD program, which is treatment alternatives and diversion. More drug courts. We've had success here in Racine County with those. As was mentioned last night, we were at NAMI Forum, which deals with mental illness and treatment of that, and finding ways to divert or to catch people before they get into the criminal system and find treatment and so on, more inmate rehab investment in that, as well as reentry programs. I know I talked to one constituent. One of the things that where it makes sense and where it works is when you have someone that has been incarcerated and now steps forward and is looking to teach and to work with people that are currently in our prison systems to ensure that they will come out and break the cycle that they have been in, as well as continue to invest in worker training and work release programs so that we can mitigate having more people enter the system. I also think that we may want to consider investing in more district attorneys so that we can speed up the prosecution and so that people aren't locked up for a long time awaiting trial or having some of those things stand over their heads, so that we do get decisions made and people into the right programs.
I know we're running short on time.
4 minutes.
So I don't want to move on to another topic because it's going to just take too long, but I want to conflate two things, because John said people want to go home to those subdivisions in Caledonia, and they want it quiet. They don't want the factory next door. And Bob says people want to go home and they want to feel safe. So correct me if I'm wrong, is one of the big issues here, how do we define nonviolent offenders? Because you want to give them alternative to jail. And so we just read a story today on WGTD about one of the biggest cocaine dealers in Racine just got arrested again for selling cocaine, and he was just out of jail or prison within the last 2 weeks. So is that one of the big stumbling blocks? How do we define who we're going to divert from jail or prison into an alternative program?
I think you always have to look, when you're talking about corrections issues, you always have to look at research, and having more people on probation and parole doesn't necessarily make things less safe. If you got a good system of probation and parole and you got a good identification of who should be out and who should not be out and who should be revoked and who should not be revoked, you can keep your world safe. I don't drive up to Minnesota and cross the border and all of a sudden think I'm not safe. You know what I mean? It's a false assumption to think that if you have a system like Minnesota's that you're going to have a society that's less safe.
Bob, you got about 90 seconds here.
Okay, so I just go. You brought up an example. I'll bring up an example for someone that's close to me. Woke up at midnight with someone that had cut the screen and left the window open. Cut the screen, and ended up in the house, robbing her. And her family of the keys to their car, took their car. These were individuals that were eventually caught based on the GPS on the car that was. And, oh, by the way, she hadn't made a payment on the car yet. They were criminals that had come down from Milwaukee. And I think a lot of us can relate to it. I think we have to work with the experts in the field, judges, law enforcement officials, and so on, work in areas like in Racine with our court system where they're having success with certain programs, but we've got to find a way to put away the habitual offender so that these kinds of crimes don't happen in our district.
Here's a closing 30-second statement from each of you. Bob Witke, we'll begin with you.
My 30 seconds is what I'm offering people is that I'll take my experience, I'll take the background that I have, I'll go to Madison, I'll work as hard as I can to work through the issues that impact the district. And one thing that I will have to agree with Mr. Lyman is that I will be elected to represent everyone in that district and look forward to continuing to move our state forward.
John Lehman.
Thanks to WGTD for the time here. I think you have a clear choice between a real Republican and a real Democrat in the 62nd race. I offer something in addition to that, though. I offer the decades of experience that I had both in the legislature and in local government, and I think I can hit the ground running. I'm fearful, as I mentioned earlier in the program, that Bob will get to Madison and he'll be a freshman legislator and he'll do what Robin Voss tells him to do. And And if that means falling into the same political activist trap that Weatherstone fell into, I feel bad for the citizens of Racine because they're not getting a welcoming legislative office. They're not getting a legislator who focuses on being out in the community and really doing what everybody wants, and that is to have efficient and well-managed government. So I offer that to folks and look forward to November 6th.
And on November 6th, it is, of course, Election Day, and we trust that you will be getting out to vote for the candidate of your choice. And in the